You're listening to the world-famous Phil Hendry Show.
Famous Phil Hendry Show. On the line with us, we have Margaret Gray. She is speaking to us, I think, probably still at work, Margaret is, and we're going to be talking to her about this very bizarre situation in Australia, which I was laughing about, and I have been taken to task for laughing about this thing. I'm not exactly sure why. Margaret joining us from the city room over there at the Syndicator. You've been working with is it Felicity Dicklin? I forget her name.
You're talking about my editor.
Yeah.
Francesca Dicklin, yeah. It's the Dicklin Syndication. It's a consortium of a lot of writers and a lot of really great editors, Phil, and we do a bang-up job of getting out to the American people every day a good cross-section, I think, of American opinion. And to that end, we are working a little bit late this evening, but I'm very happy to be with you.
Well, thank you for joining us. I know we want to talk about this story, and it has to do with a man in Australia. He's the opposition leader in Australia, a guy by the name of Troy Buswell, who they say is a very troubled man. And let me get some background.
Could I just ask you a favor before we start? Because you said something to me off the air that I asked you, would you mind saying it on the air? And you said no. And it offended me. I found it very offensive. And I want to discuss that with you, if I could.
Well, then we're not going to get to this Buswell story, Margaret.
No, I don't want to take a lot of time doing it. I just want to... I want your audience to know what you said. And I want that... If you're proud of what you said, I want your audience to know that you said that to me, and I was very offended.
I've got no problem with you talking about it. I was issuing an opinion about Michael Moore.
Yes, but what you said was that...
Well, before you say...
No, don't interrupt me.
Before... You're going to have to explain what I meant.
Don't interrupt me. You said that Michael Moore leaves a very big carbon footprint, didn't you?
Yes, I said that because of the story today in the news that claims overweight people who consume a lot, leave a large carbon footprint.
Right, and you said that Michael Moore's carbon footprint must be enormous and has probably endangered the lives of many people in a lot of small countries. Didn't you say that?
No, I didn't. I think I said it a lot funnier.
Well, what did you say?
I said that Michael Moore's carbon footprint is so big that there are whole nations that might benefit were he to cut back on eating.
See, I find that so offensive. I think Michael Moore is a wonderful filmmaker. I think he tells an awful lot of truth, and I think you really ought to be ashamed of yourself.
I think you need a sense of humor. I mean, what's the problem here?
It is not about having a sense of humor, Phil. It is about taking to task a man who has worked his life to bring to the American people a great many truths.
I happen to disagree. I think the guy is a propagandist. I think he's just, and a propagandist is not a guy that's about truth. A propagandist is a guy about spinning information, okay?
Well, what you said about him having an enormous carbon footprint, that offends environmentalists, that offends all of us. To say that he is so large, he leaves... You know, what you're really saying is that he leaves almost behind him a large... Almost a large cloud of death, in a way, you know?
Well, I think you're being dramatic.
No, you really are. You're saying, oh, a large carbon footprint. A large carbon cloud of death. A fetid and almost a corrosive and irritating cloud of stench. That's really what you're saying.
No, you're saying... I'm not saying any of that.
No, but that is what you're saying, isn't it?
No, I didn't say anything about Michael Moore leaving an enormous cloud of stench. Although it is funny.
Yeah, every laugh that comes out of you, Phil, is another step backward for people understanding truth. They think it's funny. They think it's funny, but they'll never know the truth.
Ma'am, did I not see a story today about overweight people leaving a large carbon footprint?
Yes, you did, Phil.
All right, and is not Michael Moore a big, fat, double-chin man?
That is the most offensive series of remarks.
Is he not? Is he not a big, fat, double-chin guy? Tell me. If he isn't, tell me he isn't.
I'm not going to dignify that with a response.
All right, then I'll answer it. Yes, he is. And to that end, he leaves a large carbon footprint.
Yeah, but in your hands, Phil, large carbon footprint means a large fetid... A large fetid trailing cloud. A cloud that sort of trails behind... Behind the pants and the and the underwear. You know what I'm saying, don't you?
No, you're trying to... What you're trying to do is you're trying to equate what I said with Michael Moore leaves a big fat stink every everywhere he goes. You know what? I sort of think he does.
You're very childish. You know that, don't you? You're very childish.
All right. You know what, Margaret? I can have this conversation with you, or we can get to the story that you wanted to come on and talk about.
I want to go on the record with all of your listeners as saying I think your comments about Michael Moore are absolutely reprehensible and without any merit. But I do want to talk about Mr. Buswell, because I think he is being vilified a little bit.
All right, let me get to the story here. That Troy Buswell is the opposition leader in Australia, and he broke down in tears at a press conference, admitting that he sniffed the chair of a female Liberal Party staffer. With tears in his eyes, Mr. Buswell had to compose himself before telling the media in Mandurah that his behavior has been unacceptable, and we will listen now to his comments. This is Troy Buswell apologizing for sniffing the seat of this woman's, you know, the chair.
Look, these have been difficult issues for me to deal with, and they're very difficult issues for my family to deal with. My wife and my boys, and it's a difficult process. It's hard dealing with these matters and having to face up to your responsibilities behaviourally, publicly. It's harder to do it privately.
All right, that was Mr. Buswell, and it seems like very aberrant behavior. It seems like something that he should apologize for, and it seems to me that it's something that he perhaps should seek some sort of psychological counseling for.
Well, first of all, I want to give you kudos, Phil, for not turning that into a juvenile series of comments, because it is something that needs to be dealt with.
Not everything I'm going to say here is juvenile. In fact, I don't think Michael Moore leaving a large carbon footprint was a juvenile comment.
I thought it was, too, and that's why I am bringing up to your audience the comments that you made having to do with Michael Moore, I think, are reflective as well in this story, and that is this. This man, this Mr. Buswell, who did make this thing, which was to sniff the seat of this woman's chair. Your pot pie's ready, Frank.
What are you doing?
We're in the mobile home right now. Your pot pie is ready, Frank.
What did he say?
The pot pie is ready. The microwave just went off.
I got it.
The pot pie, the beef pot pie.
Okay.
Okay, we need to...
I understand. First of all, I want to say this. The act of a man sniffing the chair of a woman, a woman's chair that she's just been sitting in, is, yes, something that's very difficult to understand. A lot of women are offended by that. But I want to let women know that the way we react to something like this sometimes is completely out of proportion to the actual act itself. This is something, certainly, Phil, that we should look at as aberrant behavior. By the same token, we really need to get a grip as women. And here I am attacking my own gender, Phil, so please understand that I'm not all, about attacking men.
No, I understand that.
Most women don't understand that when a man does something like that, while it is something that frightens us, he means it as a compliment. He means to flatter us by that. And I really think that women have, in this century, we have become so frightened of every gesture that a man makes, no matter how well-meaning, no matter how much he wants to flatter us, no matter how much he wants to pay us a compliment. And I think we really need to step off with ourselves a little bit, as the kids would say. Yes, it's something you don't really want to do in a in a body like that, in a legislature like that, in a business situation like that. But still, Phil, women need to understand that this is a flattering thing. And women need to...
Well, look, Margaret, I don't think that you're... I don't think you're approaching this the right way.
No, I'm talking to my sisters right now. I'm talking to other women. So I'm talking to women out there. When a man, even if a man does something as seemingly offensive as that, as after you've gotten up from a chair, let's say, and you're walking someplace else, and you turn around and you notice that the man who had been sitting next to you is leaning down and sniffing the seat of your chair. Do you get angry? I suppose. Do you get offended? I suppose. Are you frightened? Yes, I'm sure that you are. But I want to introduce into the equation something else. I want women to recognize this is a compliment that he's paying you. This is something that a man is saying. He is saying, I want to bend over and I want to sniff where you were sitting. Now, I know, Phil, that...
You know, I'm going to interrupt you here, okay, even if you think that I'm being rude. That is a real leap for a lot of women to make.
And you know this how? Are you a woman? I didn't know that you've had a sex change operation. I'm sorry.
I know this because I'm a man. I know this...
You're a man, so now you know how women think.
I know this because I'm a human being with some consideration. I would never in my wildest dreams think that a woman, after getting up from a chair and I bend over and sniff the seat she was just sitting in, I would never think that she would consider that a compliment.
Well, that is where, Phil, perhaps you need a little education. And maybe you're not as aware as you think you are. And maybe you ought to listen rather than just continue to talk. Maybe I've got information that you don't have.
All right, so can I ask a question?
Yes, absolutely.
You're telling me that women would consider that a compliment.
I'm saying to you that my sisters, other women, need to understand that, yes, this is essentially a very deep and very heartfelt compliment. And I'm hoping that there is a day when we can get up from where we're sitting, turn around, and happen to notice a man with his nose, yes, on the seat that we were just sitting on, running his nose up and down the seat. Maybe he's even on his knees. And maybe he's even shoving his nose so far into that seat that his nose is flattened a little bit. And maybe, just maybe, there will be the day that we'll look at that and say, isn't he sweet? Isn't he wonderful? Instead of saying, look at that pervert. Do you see what I'm saying, Phil? Do you understand that?
No, you are painting a picture of a world I don't think that I will ever live to see.
Oh, my God. How out of it are you? Oh, I see. So what am I, painting some picture of a brave new world? Is this, what is this, Star Trek? Deep Space Nine? What are you talking about?
What are you talking about? That a woman is going to turn around and see a guy who's sniffing the seat of her chair so much that it's flattening his nose, as you said it. And
well, go ahead and laugh. Go ahead and laugh, juvenile. Go ahead and laugh, little boy.
Well, it's funny to me.
No, go ahead and laugh. We're up in the treehouse now, ladies. No girls allowed. Go ahead, laugh.
Oh, okay. All right. Yes, all-seeing oracle of womanhood. Yes, there will be a day...
Now he's sarcastic.
Yeah, that's right. There will be a day when a woman can turn and see a guy sniffing the seat of the chair she was just sitting in, and she'll think, isn't he sweet? That's going to happen. Yes. Thank you, Oracle of Delphi.
Yes, he's being sarcastic now.
Like, oh, look at the low opinion you have of other women that you have to tell them I'm being sarcastic, like they can't figure it out for themselves.
Don't try to undercut my standing with your female listeners. Don't try to pretend like you know them better than I do. I'm a woman. You are a man. And I know what it means to me if I were to see Frank on his knees grabbing both sides of the chair and sniffing away where I'd just been sitting.
That's love.
There, you heard him. That is love. That's deep love. Deep, deep love. That's deeper love, Phil, than any box of chocolates, any Valentine's, any...
Now I know you're kidding.
Oh, thank you very much. I'm kidding. Go ahead and, Frank, what did I just tell you? Off the air. I told Frank this off the air.
He told me, Phil, that...
Just to hold on, Frank. Frank has gender confusion.
What did you say?
Nothing.
He just told me... that he would consider it the sweetest Valentine in the world if after coming home from work he saw me sniffing the saddle that he uses for the horse. We've got a horse, Buttercup, and he rides it. And he thought it would be a sweet gesture if I was running my nose up and down the saddle.
He told you that, huh?
He just did. Yeah, I love Margaret. He's a great wife.
I do, Fonda. The gender confusion aside, you understood that?
Yes, I did understand that. And you think that's sweet?
I think that is a very sweet gesture for a man. It could be anything, Phil. Let's talk, for instance, about a gymnastics bench. Suppose...
Thank you very much. I gotta go.
Oh, okay. Well, thank you very much for taking my call, Mr. Hendry. I'm so grateful that you allowed a woman a few seconds of time on your great show.
Yeah, okay. And you're being sarcastic, ladies. You know that she's being sarcastic.
And what a low opinion you have of women that you have to tell...
You hung up on her. You know, it's going to be hell to pay. I got to deal with her now.
That's right. You can deal with her. This is the world-famous Phil Hendry Show. So just remember, guys, what a sweet gesture that would be for her to come home and see you running your nose up and down a saddle she uses.
Phil Hendry.
Tiger Woods, today, the news is that there were some 11 women that they allege Mr. Woods was involved with, and apparently this has scandalized his fans. Certainly the media would like to think so, because they have, they've been working this story. People like myself, voices such as mine, who say, okay, you know, this is really a bad thing for his family, but I watch the guy's golf. I don't know what the rest of this has got to do with it, but I understand that I'm a man who is his alone in his opinion. Famous Phil Hendry Show here every night till 1 o'clock on the West Coast and 4 a.m. on the East Coast. I wanted to, I realized that we sort of hurried past the actual specifics of that story, and I'm not being gratuitous, but it's pretty bizarre. And this man was, and the way that this Australian paper reports it, I got to tell you, it's hysterically funny. I'm sorry, because I know the guy was in a great deal of, you know, pain, emotional pain, but he's like having to compose himself, get a glass of water. He said, the events of the recent days have made me take stock of myself. Well, anyway, the story started here that a female Liberal staffer, I guess this is the Liberal Party in Australia, and this guy is an opposition, he's the opposition leader, okay? So understand that this is like, it's like... Who's the opposition leader in the House of Representatives? It ain't Pelosi's the leader. She's the Speaker. So who's the guy in the House? It would be like if some guy was caught sniffing Pelosi's chair. It would be like if Harry Reid or somebody was caught sniffing her chair. I mean, that's how heavy it is. And I didn't want to have to say this, but we do now have news that Harry Reid was caught sniffing her chair, and we're going to. Right. Anyway, a female Liberal staffer says she was shocked and outraged when West Australian opposition leader Troy Buswell sniffed the chair she'd been sitting on. Mr. Buswell yesterday refused to deny allegations. He sniffed the chair of a Liberal staffer after she finished talking to a constituent in 2005. The unnamed staffer yesterday repeated comments she made to the Sunday Times that she was horrified and embarrassed over the incident and gave Mr. Buswell a dressing down. She added, I was shocked and outraged, and I told him. I was very concerned and expressed my displeasure loudly, and I believe that's where the matter should have ended. Mr. Buswell earlier this year admitted snapping the bra of a female Labor Party staffer and has been accused by retiring Liberal MP Katie Hodson-Thomas of making sexist remarks to her while asking her if he can sit on her feet. No, I'm kidding. He didn't say that part. Mr. Buswell...
Here you go, being juvenile. That's everything Mrs. Gray was saying.
Oh, well, okay. Why don't you go report it to Mrs. Gray, then, okay, and quit bugging me.
I'm good.
Mr. Buswell told reporters the allegations are part of a negative campaign against him, which he had predicted after taking over the leadership from Paul Amadoui, or some kind of weird-ass name, earlier this year. Is that it? I think that's it, yeah. So this cat's way out there. This happened back in 2005. Well, how the hell did this... Why is it making news now? I don't know. Maybe he did it again. So this poor man is taking stock, and it was very tearful. And you know, the part that does bug you, he says, well, my sons, my kids, how the hell do you explain that to your kids? You know what? Kids want to believe their parents are great. Kids want to believe their parents are the best. Kids are very forgiving. They really are. So you never want to take advantage of a kid. If you're caught doing something weird, tell your kid, you know, it's really kind of a drag, but daddy will always be here. And you don't ever want to hurt your children, because they'll still love you, even when you hurt them. They'll still love you or want to love you, even if you do terrible things to them. So that means someone else has to come and kill you. See? That's... joining me from Charleston, West Virginia this evening. We're going to talk about this article that I read, and I know you guys brought it to my attention, that a lot of Pakistani men are getting spa treatments.
Well, Phil, that is correct, yeah. This is current. Don?
Well, just get myself another, hot apple pie. You want a hot apple pie?
Yeah, give me a hot apple pie. Yeah, Phil, we're just finishing up. We had a very late session here, and of the couple of committees that we sit on, and so we're just finishing up a meal. We have to get some pie to go.
Okay, that's great. How are you guys this evening?
We're doing good.
Give me a
Phil, thanks for having us on the program this evening. We are going to sponsor a measure in the West Virginia State Senate early next week, and we want everyone to understand that we're not advocating this for everyone, but we do feel, to some extent, that if those groups and individuals in our country and elsewhere in the world who mean us harm, and remember that the number one job of the leaders of our country is to protect us, every single answer that we can possibly bring to bear on the problem.
I'm a fire problem, a little bit licorice pie.
Yeah. Every single answer that we can bring to bear on the problem is one step closer to solving the problem. You understand?
All right. Well, the article had to do with the popularity of spa treatments for men in Pakistan.
Well, the article dealt with a middle class range of men in Pakistan, and they go for a variety of different treatments. But if we can make these available. And what our bill is going to introduce on Monday of next week, once Guy and I get out of committee with it, we are hopeful that we can start to put in place either the hot basalt stone massages, the Huna massages, these kinds of things, that we think young men who are prone to membership in terror organizations are going to be attracted to.
All right, now you understand, when I first heard this, I thought you guys were nuts.
Well, I know that, a guy, what'd you say?
I told Kurt that I thought that you guys were definitely not favorable to the idea. You have to understand, we can bring a spa treatment and a spa massage on a terror table thing.
And also, Phil, This is a unique idea and a green idea in fighting terrorism. Now, I know what you're going to say. That sounds like the warblings of a terribly demented man to say that there's a green solution to terrorism. But if we can, we need to try it.
Well, I don't understand what you guys are advocating. Are you saying Huna massages and what is the other one?
It's hot basalt stone massage. The massage utilizing heat and a basalt stone.
It's called a hot basalt massage.
Are you telling me that you want guys in terrorist organizations?
No. Not members of terrorist organizations, but individuals who may be prone to membership in a terror organization.
Yeah, we understand that terrorists are too far gone. The spawners you can get them rubbed down.
The idea is if you get a normal daily regimen or or weekly regimen, or even monthly regimen, of the kind of pedicures and the Swedish facials on a hot cinnamon facial, that these young people who would be prone to join terror organization might be prone instead to enhancing themselves individually and find some individual worth. Now, the idea of metrosexuality, I've heard a lot of people make that comment. I don't think there's any risk that you're going to turn the average terror or candidate for terrorism in a metrosexual, you know, guy?
Now, if you're metrosexual, a lot of people have to go gay. A lot of people have to go gay.
But I don't think that nothing's better than releasing the tension from hating the West, you know, than a stone massage.
Well, how do you know that?
Well, I think it stands to reason. We're just looking for answers.
Let me ask you guys a question before we go any further. You guys are state senators in West Virginia.
That is correct, yeah.
Yeah, 13 years, Phil.
13 years for you, Guy. How long for you, Kurt?
This will be about 15th year.
The bad seat.
Okay. What are guys in the West Virginia state legislature doing, fooling around with legislation on how to get terrorists Huna massages or getting their feet rubbed? I don't understand why you guys are messing with this.
Well, we feel that there's a need in this country to come to another state. Look, you saw the news the other day with a young man in Charlotte, North Carolina, I believe it was, Guy, right?
Oh, down in Charlotte, yeah, with a young man who was a part of the terror website. Gotta get a resolved, get it rubbed up. Gotta get it rubbed down.
This young man in Charlotte, North Carolina, who has a terrorist website, and he is advocating the death of American soldiers. This is a young man that I think can still be brought around. Because he doesn't know the healing qualities of a mineral bath. He doesn't know the healing qualities of a cinnamon rub.
And only exfoliate too. Massage through the bifoliation.
Guy's talking about the exfoliate, but also foot reflexology. He doesn't know about the curative properties of soaking in deep Calistoga mud. Now, I understand, and I'm the same way. I don't want to get into those mud baths because my first thought is, what if someone has done their business in it? Guy was talking about that, too.
Now, well, you don't want to get in a mud bath field. You don't want to know what someone has done their business in a mud bath.
Well, you know, I've taken those mud baths. I've taken a mud bath. It depends on the place that you go to. Okay, I've been to places that are really top-notch. You know that mud bath, you sit in the mud, right? Is that what you guys are talking about?
Exactly. You sit in the mud, and it's got some very curative. And the couple places that I go to, and I know, Guy, you do, too. What, you go out west, though, right, Phil?
That's not a place out in the desert.
Yeah, there's a place I know in the desert that does mud baths. But here's the question. What are you guys telling me, man? Are you telling me that I take that guy who is the terror candidate and I stick him in a mud bath? Wait a minute. You brought up the fact that people might do their business in it?
Well, that was my fear. And if you got a young man who you are trying to lure away from a life of terrorists and you say to him, you can get out on down to Mud Hut.
You get on down to Mud Hut and get on mud. And it might freak out about people doing their business.
I don't want to say that they're any more frightened of someone doing their business in a mud bath than anybody else. But you only get one shot of these young people. You understand what I'm saying, Phil?
All right. No, I don't understand what you're saying. The whole thing sounds kooky, as you guys knew that it would. And you still haven't answered my...
Why does it sound kooky? When you say kooky, you're being crazy. And why does that sound crazy? If we can stop one young man from entering a world of a terrorist.
But by sticking him in a mud bath, by taking him out to some expensive spa and giving him a Swedish massage and a cinnamon facial, these are things that I would think anybody who is attracted to the world of the terrorist, the macho man, the fighter, is not going to like.
We mentioned that foot reflex on it. A lot of these people live in mud huts to begin with.
Yeah, that's the truth, Phil. They all live on a dirt floor, sleep on a dirt floor, and they get them all banged.
So if you can stick them in a vat of mud, and even if someone did do their business in it, but you don't tell them, if you can...
Oh, yeah, that's right, man. Don't tell them. You know what?
Well, Phil, the answers will come to us on Monday when we submit a bill. This will be State Bill 21, which will make certain spawn facilities available to young men of Middle Eastern descent if they come from terror-sponsoring countries. And we are going to disseminate information. You've got the brochures, too, don't you, guy?
This is a brochure of a place called the Little Mud Flat, and this is in the northern part of the state. Any young man come from any terror-sponsoring country, whether it's Syria, Iran, North Korea, any other, between the age of 1933 and 1933. And
between the ages of what?
1933.
He said from between the ages of 19 and 33.
Okay.
And here on a student visa. And you're going down to get on the mud flat. Get yourself on there.
And those young men are at risk. So even if someone has been in the mud bath and they went ahead and let one go in there, and that's not hygienic, that's true.
Well, you don't always mention that. You always bring that up. Why are you mentioning that?
Well, but Phil asked the question. I think the problem is so acute.
You guys are going to introduce this bill to the West Virginia legislature.
Yes, we are. Next Monday morning at 10 o'clock, as soon as we put the finishing touches on it.
You really think it's good?
I think they're going to laugh you out of there.
I think you're wrong. We should be sent a massage therapist, facialist, acupuncturist, and these people could do our diplomatic work for us. We really believe in this, and I'll tell you why. When Guy and I first visited this mud flat, we were doing some research and had the mud bath. We had aromatherapy. We got into our robes and sat in front of a crackling fire. And Guy started to rub my feet. I know it sounds as if there's a homosexual story that's about to develop, but no, there is not. We're both married men.
We're both married men. We become a better friend.
We became better friends, much closer. As we sat in front of a crackling fire with robes on and a aromatherapy that was wafting through the lodge, and Guy just said to me, you know what? What'd you say to me, Guy?
I said, hell, you want? I'm going to give you a foot rub.
He said, hell, I'm going to give you a foot rub. And I said, go for it. And we've been very close ever since, but not in a homosexual sense.
So because you guys went up to the old mud flat, some spa, and you put on your robes and sat in front of a crackling fire.
Right in front of a crackling fire, we also had the delicious dinner. Do you remember there was a walnut meatloaf? It wasn't real meat. It was made out of walnut. And Guy and myself, we had a side-by-side couple massage. We're not a couple, you know, but it was cheaper to get it that way.
Yeah, we got a lot cheaper. And we're not homosexuals, that would be. But we are a very, very good friend now.
Well, you guys were always good friends.
Yeah, but we're very tight now. We'd rather go to spas together than with our wives. Not because there's any homosexuality, but because we just enjoy each other's company. Can you imagine two young men who are about to lead a life in a terrorist organization, if we can get them in a side-by-side massage, possibly one of these facials you can get.
You better watch how you say facial. You're saying that a lot.
I don't mean anything like that, Phil. You know I don't mean anything sexual.
No, I know you don't mean anything sexual, but everything you're saying, man, is not going to be attractive to a kid that wants to be a terrorist.
Why do you say that?
You guys are sitting here telling me, yeah, we went up to the spa and we put on our robes and sat in front of a fire and Guy rubbed my feet.
But see, you're reading homosexuality into that.
Yeah, the same mistake everybody makes.
Everyone makes that mistake. Now, when we introduced...
What do you mean, everyone?
Well, when we first, in committee, we introduced this bill, and at that time we revealed to everyone the research that we'd done up at the old butt flat, where this is a converted... Hillbilly hound. You know?
Converted hillbilly hound.
What's a converted hillbilly hound?
It's like a hillbilly house, only they call them hounds here.
Yeah, they call them hound.
So it was an old hillbilly house that they converted into a spa?
Well, they did some improvements and add-ons. Actually, the only part of the spa that's the hillbilly house is the bathroom. But the rest of it...
Okay. Gentlemen, good luck.
No, but Phil, on Monday we are very serious.
Phil, you got to understand. Don't blow us off here like that. You think we're a couple of queers. We are not queer. I can tell you that right now.
No, Phil, we are not queer. Please don't think that.
No, I don't think that. And I, you guys, although show a little bit of a homophobic streak by using that word.
What, queer?
Are you saying queer?
What, are you guys just like saying that or something?
I'm wondering what you're saying to me.
You call me queer?
No, I'm not. I'm saying...
Why you laugh?
I'm laughing because of the way you guys say that word.
How are we saying it?
Queer.
Well, that's my West Virginia accent, I guess.
Yeah, well, okay. Hold up, pound hound.
And Senator Barton, I don't understand. But the point being that if you guys think you're going to go to a bunch of kids who are ready to be Al-Qaeda and say, hey, instead of doing that, why don't you come on up to the spa, and by the end of the weekend, you'll be sitting in front of a fire in your robes rubbing each other's feet. They ain't going to go for it.
No, because you're attaching queer to it. It ain't queer.
Not queer. Yeah, it's very straight. But I don't get anything.
And it offers a potential terrorist an eyebrow waxing and a Huna massage. Tell me he won't appreciate your gesture of goodwill. Guy and myself, I told you we had the side-by-side.
Out of side-by-side.
You know, the more you guys talk about side-by-sides and facials and rubbing each other's feet, the more frightened I get.
Well, you're not a terrorist. You're not one of them packies.
No, you ain't packy. You're a thug.
Good luck, man. I got to wait till see how this comes out.
Well, you can read it in the roll call of Charleston Roll Call. It's what the magazine is that puts out all of West Virginia vote. Charleston Roll Call.
Not a roll call is bad.
But you got to get it in West Virginia. You're in there, right?
No, I'm in California.
All right. We'll mail it to you.
Mail on it.
I'll read about it in the paper. Thanks, guys. There you go. It's the world-famous Phil Henry Show. Guy Barton, Kurt Queedy, state senators from West Virginia. How do we solve the terrorist problem? Get them all into spas. Get them all into robes. Have them rub each other's feet. Give them eyebrow waxings. Give them mineral baths. Give them Huna massages. Next thing you know, they'll be good friends. They won't be queer. They'll just be tight friends. World-famous Phil Henry Show.
We're out.
Phil Henry.
Dootin' dootin' to do. What?
I'm scared.
What are you scared of?
Guys are talking about rubbing each other.
Oh, get out of here, man. They're a couple of nuts from West Virginia. What do you care?
They're all over there talking eyebrow wax. Bugs me badly. I don't have nothing to do with them and anything they do.
I love you.
Don't. Look at, man, I didn't mean to play that.
You're scaring me, too.
They're a couple of wackos, man. Those guys, don't worry about it. Ain't you ever been to a spa?
Yeah, I went one time with my girlfriend.
Every guy goes to a spa with his girlfriend. How many guys actually go by themselves? None, except for me. Actually, there's a place I know in the desert. I go out there, but I don't, if I'm not with the wife or the woman, you know, I don't go down and get spa treatments. I don't know how to do it. I mean, I do know how to do it, but I'm not going to, I don't want to do that. I sit there on my ass by the pool, man. You know, that's what I do, right? There's a play. I really like the desert. And one of the things about me is I dig the desert in the summertime. Many people hate the desert this summer, and with good reason. It's 180,000 degrees out there. Doesn't bother me at all. Not only that, but you get the good rates. You go in, so there's this one spa I know that I go out there in the summertime when it's just blistering hot, like 120. And there's nobody in the joint, right? And you got the run of the place, and you get the good room, and the rates are down, and you can sit in the pool all day. But I ain't going to go and get the Swedish facial, if you'll pardon the expression. No way, no way, no way.
I love you.
Not this boy. Because you're laying there, you're getting the massage, and next thing you hear,
Hillary Clinton
is a closet homosexual.
And you go, well, really, I didn't know that. Here's a $20 tip anyway for the information. You're welcome. So that's my thing. Now, I don't know how we got on the subject of driving by car. Oh, I know what it was. We were talking about West Virginia, where Guy and Kurt are from. We were just talking about, have you been to West Virginia? Have you been to any, you know, outside of your own state? One of the great things to do is drive America by car. And I've been through South Carolina a couple times. I even had my car break down in South Carolina, which I wouldn't recommend, not because it's a bad place to have your car break down. But it's, you know, I mean, the towns are small other than the larger ones. And I was in this town called Manning, South Carolina. And I'll never forget, man, I couldn't, you know, I had to get my car fixed. I finally found a mechanic, and his sister ran the diner, and her brother ran the motel. So it was this. Anyway, South Carolina, just to give you an idea of what they're up to these days, they want to put a cross, or you can order a cross for your car plates. South Carolina drivers will be the first in the nation to be offered license plates that carry the phrase, "I believe," and a Christian cross over a stained glass window. Critics have threatened to fight the law in court. Well, no kidding, man. Any guy that passed a law like this knows it's a walking lawsuit waiting to happen. Americans United for the Separation of Church and State Executive Director Barry Lynn expects a lawsuit over this. He better have a southern accent.
I think the state of South Carolina has virtually put up a giant red flag with the word "sue us" on it. And this is something that's being contemplated right now as we speak.
The bill authorizing the plate passed the State House and the Senate unanimously, and it became the law without the signature of Governor Mark Sanford, a Republican, under the South Carolina Constitution. So in South Carolina, if the legislature passes it, it becomes law. The governor don't need to sign it. Mr. Sanford wrote on Thursday in a letter to Glenn McConnell, President Pro Tem of the Senate, "While I do in fact believe, it is my personal view that the largest proclamation of one's faith ought to be in how one lives one's life, not in the license plate you stick on the back of your car." And Mr. McConnell wrote back,
"I love you."
And so they're good friends.
Phil Hendry. From the shores of El Pacifico, Phil Hendry.
World famous Phil Hendry show every night till 1 o'clock on the West Coast and 4 a.m. on the East Coast. We're a news, talk, and entertainment show that knows what we're talking about, and truth is our bitch on this show. So we're going places other talk shows wish they could, but they cannot, because they don't believe in truth, because they don't believe in the fair and the just and the honest and the equal and the weird. But we do. Let me ask you a question. Are the goods that we're sending our troops in care packages good enough? Are the things that we send to our young men and women in Iraq, Afghanistan, and elsewhere in the world, are we sending these great young men and women the kinds of things that give them comfort and the kinds of things that remind them of home, a cool drink, some snacks, foods, other things that they may need, batteries for some sort of an audiovisual device they're using for their music or their movies? Are we sending them what they need? We're going to be talking with a young man, R.C. Collins, who is a cadet at Bradley Military Academy, a young man who is hoping to advance and have a career in the U.S. Army. We're going to talk to him about those things from home and those things that that we do send to our kids. Charlie LaFountain, who is a writer and a father, is going to join us in our second hour to be talking about how to dissuade child predators and what is your child's responsibility, believe it or not. We're going to talk with Charlie LaFountain about that. One of the things that he's writing about, which is controversial, is the need against all of the conversation we've heard, is the need for the kids to keep on the weight, to have extra weight. So Charlie LaFountain joining us next hour here on the world-famous Phil Hendry Show. 877-876-7445 is our number, 877-876-PHIL. And our affiliate spotlight this evening at WTAR Norfolk, Virginia, and KERN in Bakersfield, California, right up the road from us. We're going to get on the line here with R.C. Collins at Bradley Military Academy. This is in Altadena, California, as we kick off tonight. But one thing, put it on hold, will you? Put it on hold. Bud, put it on hold.
What?
The phone. Put it on hold. I can hear the... I wanted to mention our website, philhendryshow.com. If you head over there, be sure to get a backstage pass, which gives you access to literally years and years and years and years, 15 years worth of archive material, as well as our daily podcast, as well as our classic Phil podcasts, our video on demand, our daily video cast, which is up and running right now here from the El Pacifico. It's all there at philhendryshow.com. R.C., how are you, sir?
Yes, Mr. Hendry.
How are you?
I'm doing good, sir. Thank you for letting us talk about this.
What grade are you in? What level of cadet are you?
I'm a junior cadet.
You're a junior at Bradley Military Academy?
Yes, sir.
And R.C., you wrote a blog for your cadet class. I guess there are a number of I know you have an academy newspaper there. And you also have blogs for your senior level and junior level, and you wrote one having to do with supplies from home, correct?
Yes, the blog was called Message from Home, and it was about the kinds of things that troops get sent.
Oh. Yeah, maybe if you tell those guys to turn the TV down.
Turn the TV down. The article was about the kinds of things that are, or the blog was about the kinds of things that get sent to the troops in Afghanistan, in Iraq, and other places where they're deployed around, you know, the world. And the substance of the blog had to do with the fact that a lot of it is pretty substandard. It's not because the people at home don't care. I think that there needs to be more thought put into what we're sending our troops. These are people that are defending this country, and you know, I for one am very, very devoted and committed to my career here at the academy, and then eventually I want to go on to West Point. And
you want to become an officer?
Yes, sir, very much so. And then I hope to defend my country. You know, I hope to be deployed to a theater where there is active engagement of an enemy, and I can tell you that I'm willing to go to the limits. I mean, I'm like everybody here at Bradley. We're ready to go to the limits for the country that we live in, and you know, I'm pretty psycho about how I view defending my country.
And all right, so you guys are very, very committed, and we would expect nothing less. Although we are very appreciative of that. And so I take it that means that whatever you are supplied from home, and we're not talking about now standard Army issue stuff, right?
Well, I mean, the standard issue that you get in the services, whether it's the Army or the Marine Corps or the Air or what have you, is not going to be the same as what you can get from home. It's pretty, I mean, you know, regular MRI is pretty, like there's pudding and there's some meat, but it's a lot of it's dehydrated. It's not the highest quality kind of food, but you don't expect it to be high quality. It's coming from the Army. It's intended to make sure that you have enough fuel, but it's not supposed to be something that, you know, is comfort food. What we want from back home has more to do with, you know, rounding out the experience of being deployed overseas and having stuff from back home that is, you know, making it worth putting your life on the line.
Talking to R.C. Collins, who is not yet in the Army. He is a junior cadet at Bradley Military Academy. And we're discussing, I guess, the quality of the home front support. Now, we're not talking about anything here, R.C., having to do with... you are, as a young man, you're not yet in the military, but you see the way the average soldier is being supplied by the military itself as adequate, correct?
Yeah, and the one thing I want to correct, I'm not in the military in a technical way that you said. You're right about that, Mr. Henry, but it's not the best thing for our morale, I guess, to say, well, you're not in the military, you're not in the military. I mean, I am in the military in the sense that the minute I came to Bradley Military Academy, the minute I put on the cadet cap, the minute that we were on the parade grounds for the Commandant Parade, and then the different you know, things that we did, I mean, and learning and training and everything that goes into being a military academy, I am in the military, because otherwise, and I'm ready, you know, I'm pretty psycho, and so are a lot of my friends that are here in the class. So to say that we're not in the military is kind of bad. It's kind of bad for the morale a little bit.
All right, well, I mean, what I'm saying is you're not an official member of the United States Army.
No, sir, not yet, no. But I know that, you know that. I mean, we don't have to keep, I guess, beating it into the ground, you know.
All right, well, I'm not going to beat it into the ground. I wanted to make that distinction. What are the things that the soldiers, that the sailors, that the airmen, that the Marines, what are the things that our fighting men and women around the world, what do you feel they are not getting?
Well, I think personally, and I've talked to a lot of the cadets here, I mean, there's a lot that they're not getting that they need to have that they are not getting. For instance, if you some of the stuff that they get borders a little bit on as if they're little kids, and I don't mean to say that I don't want to insult anybody at home, because I know the parents really try to do their best, but it's a little bit of an insult to send like Pop-Tarts and stuff like that, you know. And
why is that an insult? Isn't that kind of a nice treat to have?
Well, I mean, we're fighting men, and you know, we want to kill, you know, for the country and kill the enemy, and go, and you go, oh yeah, here's a treat. It sort of minimizes.
So you feel that that kind of diminishes the mission?
Yeah, a little bit. I think it diminishes the mission. It makes it seem so, you know, like here's your Pop-Tart. Go out and kill the enemy. I mean, that's really that very respectful. The other thing, and I think you saw this in the movie Hurt Locker, which was a very good movie, but I don't think it did a lot for the morale to show that sometimes you're going out, you know, on a mission, or you're going out on patrol, and you've got a juice box in a cooler, which is totally, totally, totally something that just maybe a school kid would have, you know?
And well, are they drinking out of juice boxes over there or not?
Well, yeah, they are, but I mean, I didn't think it was good for the director of the movie to show it, and I think that's something that needs to be addressed. I don't think we want to have a juice box, you know, like that. It would be great if we had root beer or we had Coca-Cola. There's nothing wrong with that. But we would prefer to be in a container that, I guess, sort of you can look at and go, well, I got a bottle in my hand, I got a can in my hand, and I'm sitting here with a juice box like I'm a little kid, you know, that I'm not allowed to be able, I can't do my job. You know,
well, you're taking personally the idea that there's juice boxes and Pop-Tarts being sent to the troops, right? And
well, yeah, I think a lot of soldiers take it personally. I mean, we
have, well, who have you talked to? Have you talked to soldiers that are upset that they're getting juice boxes and Pop-Tarts instead of what? And you say a bottle or a can?
Well, yeah, a bottle or a can or instead of a Pop-Tart, it would be better if you just. It doesn't have to be anything very elaborate. They have the sausages that you can get in the like in the freezer section of the market. If you get the frozen sausage, the frozen sausage sandwiches that they have, those are very good. They have the sausage patties that are very good. I would much rather have the sausage patties or the frozen sausage sandwich than a Pop-Tart, which I think is just, like I said, kind of little kid-like.
All right.
Like the Jimmy Dean, they have those. And donating juice boxes is sort of cheap, too. That's the other thing I was going to say, and Pop-Tarts, too. We want to feel as if people are spending money on us because we could die. And if you're giving your life for your country and people are, like, being cheap. Yeah, I was just talking to Cadet McMillan said that if you're being cheap, then it means you hold our lives cheap, too.
If you're being cheap, who are you talking to specifically now, RC? Are you talking?
Well, I mean, I'm talking to the parents. I'm talking to just everybody that gives stuff to the troops. Please don't hold our lives so cheaply in your hands that the only thing we rate are juice boxes and Pop-Tarts.
All right, our number is 877-876-PHIL, 877-876-7445. R.C. Collins from Bradley Military Academy talking about these snacks and supplies and things that are sent to the troops by civilians. I wanted to ask you, R.C., and I don't think that it's, I don't think I'm talking out of school now. When you say that you don't want people to be cheap, when you say you don't want the people out there to be cheap, the mothers and fathers, aren't you being a little demanding, you know?
Well, I don't think so, sir. I mean, we're talking about giving our lives for the country. I'm going to die someday killing Al-Qaeda, and if there's a God in heaven, I'll die killing Al-Qaeda. That's how I want to go. And all I'm asking for is that instead of sending me treats, that I get a sausage sandwich or sausages. And you know, I mean, I'm too young now. If I go to Iraq or Afghanistan, I'll probably want to have a cigarette. And they don't even want to send cigarettes because the brass, the army, you know, the top of the army don't want us to have them.
You guys don't get cigarettes?
No, we don't. And
well, you guys in the military academy are too young, but you're talking about the soldiers in Iraq and Afghanistan?
Well, I don't imagine they get cigarettes either, the way that they're treated by the Army brass and by civilians, too.
Well, there's a big thing about smoking. I mean, we could get into that, but I right now what we're talking about is what you consider to be the substandard stuff being sent by civilians. It's cheap. And R.C. Collins joining us from Bradley Military Academy, basically saying, spend some money on us. We're going to sacrifice our lives for the country. We're getting Pop-Tarts and juice boxes, and we would appreciate, instead, cans and bottles of root beer and sausage McMuffins and these kinds of things. Is there a disconnect here between us at home, on the home front, and what our young people, our young fighting men and women need? Because God knows, whatever it is they need, we're ready to give it to them. Whatever it is they want, we stand here ready to give it to them. R.C. is talking about, quote, spending some money. 877-876-PHIL, 877-876-7445. The world-famous Phil Henry Show back in just a moment here with R.C. Collins. Don't forget our website, philhenryshow.com.
We can't fight this fight alone. Give us a call. 877-876-PHIL. That's 877-876-7445. Call the Patriot Hotline, dial 877-876-PHIL. That's 877-876-7445.
That's his TV on. Welcome back here to the world-famous Phil Henry Show. And again, 877-876-PHIL as we talk here with R.C. Collins. Again, you guys need to have that TV turned down there. And we're talking with Mr. Collins and other members of Bradley Military Academy about the, I guess you could say, the care packages and the supplies and things that we send to our fighting men and women from home. And a lot of it, yeah, is comfort food, the Pop-Tarts and the juice boxes and the Starbursts, you know, and things like that. R.C. is claiming that this is rather inexpensive stuff and bruises morale when the soldiers get this stuff because they look at it and they think, how much are they spending on this back home when I'm here fighting for my country? Our number is 877-876-PHIL, 877-876-7445. We're going to take some of your phone calls as well. I wanted to ask you, R.C., examples of other things that you consider to be substandard or cheap that come from the States.
Well, a lot of the guys I know that is coming back, and I tell you, a lot of them say they'll get things like Skittles, or they get like what you just mentioned, Mr. Henry, which is the Starbursts, or they get peanuts. And it when you're expecting to get sausages or to be able to get a big keg of root beer or something. I mean, I we're just asking, you know. Charles Dickens wrote Oliver Twist, which was a book about a little boy that was starving and living in London, and even he got, you know, you figure Twist got sausages and from the protagonist in the book. We just read it in our English lit class. So Twist, I think, is an example of how tough you can be, and that's what I was grateful for when I read about Twist.
And what did we say, Twist?
Oliver Twist.
Oh, I'm sorry, Oliver Twist, yeah. But that was a young man who was starving to death.
Well, that's what I mean. I mean, he didn't have anything, and yet when he did find people that would take care of him, he got sausages and things like that. But what we get are Skittles, and you just, I don't want to go and come out of a cave with an insurgent's head on a stick for a bag of Skittles, you know.
All right. 877-876-7445. I hear what you're saying. I'm also mindful of the fact that you're not yet in the military. Here is Jim. Hi, Jim. You're on the Phil Henry Show with R.C. Collins.
Yeah, I just want to know how this guy feels like he can answer for men and women who've seen combat, himself not seeing combat. I know several people that have been over in the war,
uh-huh.
And are grateful to get anything, and look forward to getting their mail and stuff from home.
Well, I mean, yeah, I mean, you're right, and I know guys over there, too. See, I'm not talking about necessarily combat. I'm talking now about just what you get from the States, and you're over there, and any day you could take incoming, you know, like an incoming mortar, and guess what you got that day in the mail? You got, like, macadamia nuts or some, or, you know, Starburst, and you're going to die for that?
No, you're dying. You're dying for your country because that's what they signed up to do.
Well,
they're also getting paid. It's not like we're paying them. It's not like we're paying them Starburst to go put their lives on the line. That's added extras from home.
Well, I know, but it doesn't seem like it's enough that they could send, good Cadbury chocolates and stuff like that. You know, spend a little bit of money instead of going down to a liquor store and getting a big hunk.
I know plenty of people who are in the armed services and would be happy to get nothing from home. They're happy just to serve their country and don't feel like they have to have extra sent from home.
What about that, RC? Do you talk to guys that are? Do you talk to guys that are don't care?
I've never talked to anybody that doesn't care. Guys are always looking for an extra deal and everything. They're finding stereo equipment from Italy and, you know, or they're finding stuff from Egypt. I mean, they're always shipping stuff back here. I mean, if you think about the guys. They ship stuff stateside that's pretty good. Like the older brother of a friend of mine, he shipped back a whole bunch of iPods and stuff that he got. Well, I mean, it was black market. But
all right, I mean, that's fine. But, I mean, what do you hear guys complaining that they're not getting anything from the States?
Yeah, you hear a lot of people go, you know, what's this mushroom, I mean, the mushroom stew that they got one time. And they got some Progresso soup, and they hated it.
Progresso soup. All right. Jim, thank you. Our number, 877-876-7445. Are the things that we send our men and women overseas, is it quality stuff, or are we shortchanging them? RC says, he's a cadet, though. He says we ought to spend more money. 877-876-Phil.
Phil Hendry. Patriot Hotline, dial 877-876-PHIL. That's 877-876-7445.
Welcome back here to the world-famous Phil Hendry Show, and we're talking with R.C. Collins, who is a cadet at Bradley Military Academy, and he's basically talking with us about the food and the treats and the snacks and the things like that that are sent to our troops overseas, whether they be Skittles or whether they be Starbursts, or whether they be juice boxes, or these kinds of things, socks, shirts, board games. RC, your basic point is they're not good enough. This stuff is cheap, and they want stuff that's better.
That's essentially it, sir. And
all right, now what about the fact that you haven't been over there? That was the comment that was made to you by the first caller. You haven't been there. You don't know.
Well, Mr. Henry, I've talked to soldiers that have been there. I've talked to guys that have gone over there, and they've all said to a man the same thing, that, you know, we don't want to tell civilians because there's an attitude in the military. I don't know if you know this or not, but it's hard for us to be honest with civilians because we don't know whether they're going to be able to take it or not, and there's a lot of ugly stuff that we've seen. But when we go to Iraq or Afghanistan and they're going to send me a Slim Jim and a hand sanitizer, and I want to go and I'm going to kill, well, not Bin Laden anymore, but you know, Al-Qaeda, and they're sending hand sanitizers and gum, you know.
Well, yeah, but the guy we just talked to said you're doing it for the pay and you're doing it for the patriotism.
Yeah, you know, Mr. Henry, that sounds good in a movie, you know. That sounds real good in the movie, and it sounds real good on Fox and Friends. But I'm psycho. I'm ready to eat my own guts for my country, and I do want to eat my own guts for my country. But not to come back to base camp and see that somebody sent me a board game or mouthwash.
Well, what do you guys want? You want more porn?
I didn't say that, sir.
Well, I mean, to me, that's what it sounds like.
Well, I didn't say that, but...
Are you asking for adult things like that, porn, or are you asking for...
We're asking for to be treated like men, yeah. And the fact is, we don't really have that much to relax to. If you're seeing adult films, I mean, I would appreciate that, yeah. And I would appreciate a beer instead of somebody sending me a, you know, baby wipes or something.
All right, 877-876-PHIL, 877-876-7445. R.C. Collins here. Here is Shane. Go ahead, Shane. You're on the Phil Hendry Show as we talk about the stateside stuff. Go ahead.
Hey,
Shane.
Hey, this is Shane from Connecticut.
Yes, sir.
Yeah, it's just funny to me that you have someone on the line here, R.C. Collins, that's a cadet who's never experienced anything, never been deployed. I'm a 10-year Navy veteran, honorable discharge. I was on submarines, and I've been deployed many, many months overseas. And the creature comforts of home are what matter. And I never at
exactly.
any point in my military. Can
exactly.
I finish my point?
Well, yeah, but I mean, you guys, are you telling me you're happy with a baby wipe?
Let the guy finish.
Yeah, I mean, it's not about being happy or not being happy. You just appreciate the fact that your relatives, your friends, your family members are thinking of you, and you have that little taste of back home to remember what you're fighting for. It's not the dollar amount or the physical gift itself. It's the fact that I'm fighting over here, defending my country, for my family members and my friends to live in a free country back home, and they're thinking about me while I'm out here. That's what you care about. At no point in my 10 years of service did I think, while I was deployed overseas, man, I wish someone would send me, a pornographic magazine, or I wish
someone would
send
me... Well, yeah, but you're in the submarine service. You guys had it pretty good. I mean, you get to eat steak and eggs and everything.
Oh, you think... Hey, how many submarines have you served aboard?
Well, Mr. Henry, didn't you say your brother was on a sub?
My brother was on a sub a long time ago, but still in all, your comment, R.C., is you guys have got it easy. Submarine life is, you guys are working 24 hours a day, right, Shane? I mean, you guys don't stop moving on a sub.
Absolutely, Mr. Henry. It's 18-hour days, 6 hours on watch. It's daunting.
Right. And you're underwater a lot, too, right? Are you not, you're not above
absolutely.
The surface for long stretches.
No,
yeah,
are
you kidding me?
Do anything.
That's not all that hard if you think about what other guys is doing on in Afghanistan.
R.C. Collins, I'm not going to compare apples and oranges. Every service, every branch has its difficulties. My service was no easier than a Marine's and vice versa. I've done missions with Army Rangers. I've done missions with Marine Recons. That have ridden aboard my boat to do spec ops, and they've said to me, I don't know how you can do this. And the reason I was able to do it is because when I pulled into Liberty Ports or I pulled into a port, getting the letters from back home, the cards,
mm-hmm.
the pictures, the thank you, we appreciate what you're doing. And for me, the biggest thing for me, I didn't care what anyone sent me. It's when you came home on leave.
Yeah.
And I got to see my parents, and I see other veterans, and they shake my hand.
If you're on a submarine, though, you get a granola bar. Right, but if you get a granola bar on a submarine, that's probably like, well, whatever, because we already get granola bars and everything like that. But in Afghanistan, if you get a granola bar, it's an insult, because you're thinking, yeah, sure, thanks.
I don't see it.
What?
I'm just glad that someone's thinking about me, and the food on the submarine... take it from my experience, it's not steak and eggs every day. It's dehydrated milk, it's dehydrated eggs, no produce, everything's frozen, so it's not that great.
Don't you get offended when you get popcorn and stuff like that? I would be.
Offended? Why would you be offended?
Why would I be
offended about cheap
popcorn? I don't give you...
Civilians are cheap.
Your problem is you're fixating on... the physical gift
stuff.
Itself, what it is,
right.
and not the thought behind it, and not that you have relatives and family members that appreciate what you're doing
stuff.
For your country. You want another?
I know.
You want that attaboy pat on the back. But
I want to get stuff in the mail.
Prefer...
If I just got out of a cave with an insurgent's head on a stick, I want to have something like better than a board game and shampoo. God.
Oh, you're, you know, like you said, like the man said.
What?
That's what you need. That's what you need to feel satisfaction for your job. For you're like a ball of contradictions, because on one token you say, I eat my guts for my country. I do this, I do that. And then
I'm psycho.
A minute later you say, but I want something from home that's worth it. I want something I'm not happy.
Right.
With a Skittle.
Yeah, you don't want hand sanitizers. You don't want all these things that are going to be sent by people, hand sanitizers and baby wipes. I mean, who knows, man? Maybe the Army or whatever says that the guys need that stuff. Shane, thanks so much for your call, and good talking to a guy on the submarine. What was the name of your boat? What was the name of your boat?
I was on the USS Helena stationed out of San Diego, California. Hoorah, Helena.
My brother was on the Barb. Is the Barb still in service? Probably not, huh?
No, it's not. It's been decommissioned. Decommissioned submarine. But I appreciate your to have a have a connection to a fellow submariner. That's good to know.
Oh yeah, he went to New London, Connecticut, and then Pascagoula, which is where their boat was when he got out of the sub school. Was New London where you went?
That's where I live. I live in New London, Connecticut. I'm a Navy brat. My father was 20 years retired Navy. I was an instructor at the submarine school for my last 4 years in the service. So I've got
out of sight,
the
man.
Marine Force, and I've been deployed, and I know what it's like. I'm speaking from experience, not from a cadet's point of view who has
right.
experience.
So, thank you. I appreciate
very much,
it.
Henry.
Thanks very much, sir. All right, there's Shane. RC, you know.
Well, I mean, you basically let him just, you know, have his way with me. And
what do you mean? He was talking about a guy who's out there getting stuff from home, stuff that they want, stuff that they need. And you're talking about what? You're talking about being in the academy.
Well, yeah, but I was given my point of view, and that guy's having his way with me, talking about how, this, and that. And I'm standing there just going, well, I mean, I don't know anything about no submarine, and nobody else knows anything about submarines. It's a pretty secret thing. Those guys probably think that, I don't know, they probably get bitch and stuff in the mail, and they don't care.
Yeah, that's right. If you're on a sub, you get all the really cool stuff that you're talking about, like sausage McMuffins. All right, 877-876-PHIL. Anybody else in the service want to set this guy straight? You're more than welcome. R.C. Collins with us here from Bradley Military Academy as we talk about the stuff that's sent from home. The little things like the handy wipes and the baby wipes and the mouthwash and the socks that go to the soldiers and go to the sailors and everybody else. And as R.C. has been talking, as far as he knows and the people that he talks to, all that stuff is cheap. And they want you to start spending a little bit of money on them. 877-876-PHIL. It's the world-famous Phil Hendry Show.
We can't fight this fight alone. Give us a call. 877-876-PHIL. That's 877-876-7445. Hotline now, 877-876-PHIL. That's 877-876-7445.
Phil Hendry here with R.C. Collins from Bradley Military Academy. You know, R.C., you're talking very honestly and very earnestly here about wanting really good stuff from home. If you go to Afghanistan, if you go to Iraq, you want to make sure that you have really cool stuff. Meanwhile, you're being very childish.
Well, in what way, sir?
Well, when I said, would you hold on, which is a typical term, yeah, you're going, hold on to what? And we're on the air. You want to be treated like a man, why don't you act like a man?
Sir, I with all due respect, Mr. Hendry, I'm acting like a man. I'm on a radio station. The way that I act like a man and the other people that I'm with is we're going to go to Afghanistan and Iraq, and we're going to kill the enemies of America. And then we go back to base camp, and you get back to base camp after you've been out on a mission, let me tell you what. And you come back to hot chocolate packets and gum? You know, you come back from a strike vehicle. You ever been on a strike vehicle, Mr. Hendry?
No, have you?
Well, that's not the point. Yes, I have, because I'm going to be. I mean, I'm in the military academy.
No, you've never been on a strike vehicle, and you've never been to Afghanistan. So, no, you don't know what it's like.
Well, I've got a way better idea, sir, than you do. And I'm just telling you, you come back from a mission, back to base camp, and there's sunflower seeds and Slim Jims, and you feel cheated, and you feel that nobody at home cares whether you live or die.
Oh, come on. And you're not even talking for a soldier. You come back from a mission, and you come back to base camp, you know.
Well, yeah, that's what it's called. You don't know what it's called. I do. And I come back from mission base camp, and all I see, and there's no sausage or sausage McMuffins or anything.
No, you know what? I've just heard from a number of people. We just heard from that young man, and I know you don't think it counts because he was on a submarine and they got all the really good stuff, saying that they appreciate the thought behind these things. Let's go to Tom. Tom, you're on the Phil Hendry Show with R.C. Collins. Go ahead, please.
Hey, young man, I'm telling you, I'm a Vietnam vet. I'm 65 years old. And
yes, sir.
When we got packages from home, we wanted foot powder. We wanted handy wipes. We wanted those things to keep our... We use handy wipes to keep our weapons clean half the time. We use foot powder to keep our foot clean so we can go out in the field. And by the way, young man, you do not go into combat with the idea you're going to give your life. The object of going into combat is to go in, complete your mission, and come back out alive with your men.
Of course, that's
sergeant.
What I want to...
You'll never be a second lieutenant, young man, because you're just not that squared away. Thank you.
Well, sir, I want to go and kill the enemy and come back to something more than a handy wipe, wouldn't you?
Until you have fired a shot in anger, don't tell me about killing an enemy. The first time you kill someone, young man, you're going to throw up all over yourself because it is not a pretty sight.
Are you kidding me? That'd be the bitchinest thing ever.
He's
don't
talking real life here, R.C.
I have lived.
Well, I've done that movie Platoon.
That's a movie, R.C. Listen to this, gentleman.
Combat. I have lived combat. 1st Battalion, 5th Marines, 3rd Battalion, 1st Marines, 5th Marine Brigade. You tell me what I did wrong. I came home. I took 39 troops over there in a platoon, as a platoon sergeant. We came home, 39 men. We took them over. We brought them back. I'm proud of that. We didn't die.
That's very good. That's very good. Outstanding.
Yeah, but were you guys, like, you know, in a heavy firefight and stuff like that?
Are you listening to what the man's saying?
I was in the Battle of Khe Sanh. Look it up. Son of a gun.
What's that?
I'm telling you, it's
that was
not pretty.
Khe Sanh, that was after the Tet Offensive. That was during the Tet Offensive. It's a very big battle. It's on Wikipedia. It's in all the encyclopedias. It's a part of history. It's a part of world history, the battle for Khe Sanh. The Marines were there, and they won back that city during the Tet Offensive. And, R.C., you're being very disrespectful asking this man, taking a platoon over there and coming back with all of his soldiers, did you get into any fights?
Well, no, I didn't mean to be disrespectful. I just wondered if you can go over there with 39 guys and come back with all 39. Maybe they were just, you know, sitting around or something. I don't know.
Sitting around? It was Vietnam War.
Firefight? You're crazy, boy.
Well, I mean, I thought you'd
never be. You will never be a second lieutenant because you're just not smart enough to be an officer.
Well, I'm not trying to be in the Marines. I'm not trying to be in the Marines. I'm trying to be Army.
What's that supposed to mean?
Maybe you don't have to be as smart.
I know a lot of people in the Army. They wouldn't tolerate you. The only thing you'll ever be in your career, if you go into service, will be mess officer somewhere.
I don't think so, sir.
You don't have the attitude.
With all due respect, I'm going to go in. I'm going to get an insurgent on the end of my bayonet. You'll see.
Oh, you're going to wind up getting killed, probably, R.C., with an attitude like that. You know, going in with a... You know, you've been watching way too many movies.
Speaking of movies, I want to ask this man.
If he's too sick, he won't know what to do.
Well, what is going to make me sick about that? I just killed me what do you call the guys over there?
You have never heard any Marine, any soldier, ever tell you about killing the enemy. If they brag about killing the enemy, they didn't do it, young man.
What? Are you kidding
me? We did our job.
I seen a guy on TV the other day talking about it in Okinawa. And all the guys that they killed.
That was the World War II documentary. They asked them about it. Of course they're going to talk about it. Did you know, what happened on Okinawa that they're going to talk about it?
No, it wasn't Okinawa. It was Iwo Jima.
Whatever, man. Same difference. They asked those Marines, well, what did you do? Where did you go? How did...
Yeah?
My father was killed on Corregidor in World War II.
Where's that?
The Philippines, the beginning of World War II.
If you're in a military academy, you should know that you should know the military history.
Corregidor's where?
The Philippines, you idiot! That was the beginning of the war. That was right after Pearl Harbor was bombed.
Well,
you've never heard
about
the Tom Bet Death March?
The
Tom Death March, right? You've never heard the term Bushido?
Is that what
you've
is that? Is that food?
Bushido?
Is that food?
Yeah,
sure, it's food. Bushido is sure death.
I thought it was
Bushido
a dish.
Player, if you fall behind. The Japanese soldiers had no respect for anyone who was a prisoner.
What you got to do, RC, is spend less time calling up talk shows and more time getting into your books and your history and other things and quit talking about stuff you don't know anything about and just shut up. That's what you need to do.
Well, if I don't say it, who's gonna?
Nobody, and that's a really good thing. No one will talk about the dumbass stuff you're talking about, like getting Slim Jims and sunflower seeds and how you're not happy with that. Tom, outstanding to talk to you, sir. Thank you very much, Tom, and thanks for your service.
Plenty of time I would have given I'd given everything I had for a Slim Jim and a handful of sunflower seeds.
Are you kidding? That's
somebody
cheap.
Cared.
You could have gotten macadamia nuts.
You want to take a
in
beer
any event,
into combat? You're crazy.
A what? Take
you
a beer
into
combat?
Well, I don't want to
take
zone?
No, crazy. You want to take a juice box? Where? If you take a juice box in there, the Viet
yeah,
Cong will laugh themselves sick.
You know why I'll take a juice box? Because it's kept
why?
Island. Because it's got the essential minerals in it that you need to keep going. It's got electrolytes.
Yeah,
in it.
But if the VC see you with it, they'll laugh themselves sick.
Your water, boy.
Exactly. All right, Tom. Thanks very much for your call. I appreciate it, and thanks for a very interesting caller. And if you would have kept your mouth shut, you might have learned something from that man. He's been around.
He goes into combat with a juice box. The Viet Cong would have gone ha 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 ha.
Yeah, and while they're laughing, guess what?
They get dead?
Yeah, that's it.
Didn't think about that one.
There's a lot of crap you haven't thought about on this show tonight. You call up with all kinds of silly-ass notions about things.
What are you getting all mad about? You're all like, there's a lot of crap you didn't think about tonight. God, just take it easy, Mr. Henry.
Well, waste my time, man. My producer says, oh, we got this kid from the military academy. He's going to talk to us about, you know, packages from home. The next thing I know, you're yakking about Slim Jims coming out of a cave with an insurgent on your bayonet and the Viet Cong laughing themselves sick when they see a Marine with a juice box.
Well, that guy said I was going to throw up when I killed me, my first insurgent. I don't think so. They just roll off my knife.
What you throw up?
I got a fever booster.
Phil Hendry. Broadcasting from the shores of El Pacifico, Phil Hendry.
World famous Phil Hendry show every night till 1 o'clock on the West Coast and 4 a.m. on the East Coast. The news talk and entertainment show that knows what it's talking about, where truth is our bitch and where we go places other talk shows wish they could, but they cannot. And that's the part that is devilish about it. And of course, we are radio for patriots by patriots every night here. As I mentioned, we're holding forth trying to help you across the sort of a maze, a kind of, I guess you'd say, a swamp of soft, dumb heads. Charlie LaFountain is going to be joining us this hour. Mr. Fountain is a parent and a member of his parent-teacher organization out in the Azusa area of California. He's the father of a 14-year-old girl, and he's going to be joining us next with some controversial ideas on how to dissuade child predators from attacking our kids. This is a ongoing problem. One of the good things about it, though, is that we are now very aware of it and we're dealing with it head on and we're not hiding it and we're not as dumb as we used to be. I mean, I remember 20 years ago, the whole McMartin case was an example of mass hysteria just run amok. I mean, it wasn't just that people were beginning to imagine things. They were destroying people's lives and reputations in the process. So hopefully we've gotten a little bit smarter. Reminder that we are online at philhenryshow.com. That's philhenryshow.com. And you can get a backstage pass and access to our live streaming video of the show every night, Phil TV in HD, as well as our archives, podcasts, and our video archive, a five-day archive of the show, audio as well as video. It's all there at philhenryshow.com. It's probably the best deal you're going to get anywhere in the on the Internet when it comes to a radio show. Also, we're going to be on Fox and Friends on June the 14th on the Fox News Channel. 877-876-PHIL is the number. And Charlie the Fountain joining us from Azusa, California this evening. And Charlie, thanks for joining us, sir. How are you?
Very good, Phil. Thank you for having me.
And you are, right now, I know you're at some kind of an event.
Well, it is a carnival that we have. It's the beginning of the summer carnival that we put on. The Ben's Club here at our church, and I man a booth, and that's what I'm doing. That's what I was doing before I got on the phone with you.
And you have been very vocal in your community. I know that there were, over the past 3 or 4 years, several instances of children being attacked. And we're not talking about necessarily in their homes by their fathers or male or female relatives. We're talking about in the community.
That is, yes. Unfortunately, we had one incident here over the last 8 months, which was quite traumatic for the community. As well as two incidents of stranger attacking two young kids here, and so we put together some creative ideas and managed ideas that we hope will begin to arm our young people as well as parents to the problem of predators, because this is the summer and these are the months when the kids are out on the streets. They're doing all of the things the young person wants to do. They're, you know, visiting their friends, or they're riding their bikes, or they're taking the bus, or going someplace, or driving a car. And we have come up with steps that we feel need to be implemented, and we think that they go contrary, certainly, to the popular wisdom. And so that's what I'm warning you.
Well, and give me an example.
Well, an example would be we've heard, especially the last few months, we've heard that we've got an obesity problem among children. Well, I have to tell you that that's the least of our worries if we have an obesity problem, because we've also got a children are being attacked and murdered problem. And
now, you're not trying to panic people, are you?
No, I'm not trying to panic anybody, but you're aware, and I'm aware, and I think everyone in your audience is aware that children are at risk. So when we tell kids that they have an obesity problem and that they must lose weight, what we're telling them is shed the fat, slim down, get into a more healthy regimen, and become more attractive to a child predator, a freak, and a creep.
And well, that's not what we're telling them.
No, it's not what we're telling them, but that's the effect.
And so you're telling me that we need our kids to remain heavy.
What we need is our kids to not to know what are the priorities here. Is the priority keeping the weight off so that somehow you keep the weight off as a kid, so somehow you hit your 18th birthday ready to rock and roll? I don't know what that means. Or is the priority keeping the kid alive past tomorrow?
See, to me, that's panic talk. Keeping the kid alive past tomorrow.
I'm telling you, you don't know where these predators are. My daughter is 14 years old. She's a beautiful young lady. She's also an intelligent young girl. And we certainly are very proud of her. But I would much rather she sit down and eat all the pancakes that she wants, have all the donuts that she wants, and put some weight on create, if you will, a body type that's not going to be something that looks like eye candy to one of these freaks that goes after children.
And I think you are, it sounds to me like you're missing what being a child predator is about, you know?
Oh, I'm missing it. Well, what do you mean am I missing what being a child? Mr. Henry, I'm not missing anything. If you want to enlighten me.
Well, I think the psychological dynamic at work here, these people that are doing this are delusional people. They don't even get to what they're doing, I think, in some cases. Well, I think they know it's wrong. I'm not trying to give them an excuse there. But I believe that I don't know, that body type or whatever.
You're saying that you don't think that a predator that wants to target a young girl is going to care whether she is lovely, like my daughter, a lovely young lady, a healthy young lady, or if she has, you know, or if she's fat and she's a little fat kid. You say there's no difference.
I think it's opportunity, you know.
You think, well, Mr. Henry, I have to tell you.
Well, I just think it's opportunity. I think that it doesn't matter if she's slender or if she's fat. If there's an opportunity.
I am telling you, based upon my observations and based upon my instinct as a father who has a young daughter still at home, I'm telling you that I am not going to risk my daughter walking around in the summer months in California, a beautiful, healthy young woman, so one of these these guys that get their kicks and their freak with kids can spot her and try to snatch her off the street. I would rather that she is a fat kid, and I know that that's probably not going to... She's 14 years old, so I don't think... Well, she certainly...
Well, that's the other thing. 14-year-old girls are pretty aware of themselves.
I understand that, but they're not if you tell them they look beautiful.
14-year-old girls, it doesn't matter what you say to them, man. They're going to be walking around with their friends. The fact is, you want your daughter fat. Is that what you're saying?
I want my daughter safe, and the way to make her safe is to keep as much fat on her and make her... I am tired of listening to these commercials.
The way to make her safe, then, is to make her unhealthy.
I don't buy that at all. I don't buy that a 14-year-old kid with fat is unhealthy. I don't buy that at all. You pack some fat on a kid, and the kid may live longer than next Tuesday. But
like I said, you don't want to panic anybody.
What I'm trying to do is I'm trying to get the word out to all parents. And
no, but when you say live past next Tuesday, live past next September, you are talking like a panicked man. And
Mr. Henry, we live in the state of California. The summer months are here. You're telling me there aren't guys standing on every street corner whose freak isn't some young, I don't know how these guys think, but they think, they look at a kid and they think it's a tasty deal. I don't know how these freaks think. But if they look at my daughter... What they're going to see, if children to these guys are pieces of fruit on a tree, my daughter is a fat pear that's hanging from a tree. And
so you want to make her a fat kid so that she isn't so attractive. All right, our number is 877-876-PHIL.
Well, I didn't say make her unhealthy, but what I am saying is we need to begin to look seriously at how to attack this problem. And let's stop with all of this. We've got an obesity problem with children. What we have right now is a problem that our children are being victimized, and we have to dissuade these predators. We need these kids to stay fat and to stay in the mind of a predator as revolting as humanly possible.
Well, I would love to be able to sit down and look at the psychological profile of some of these people and ask them, well, now, this kid is really fat and revolting. Did it make any difference? Are these people, mentally, does it matter to them, And I don't know what happens if we get a call this hour from someone who was attacked as a child and they were fat.
Well, in their mind, they were fat. See, that's the thing. In their mind, you've got a lot of these anorexic kids. They think they're fat. I think we need these kids to be fat fat. And then at 17, I think we need to get them to mandatory fat camps so that they can hit their 18th birthday in good shape and be attractive or however they want. But as long as they're underage and they're children, we need for them to be as repulsive and revolting as possible to any weirdo that wants to take advantage of them.
And in your mind, that's keeping them fat.
Keep them fat and don't harp on the whole childhood obesity thing. Keep your kid fat and weird looking. Keep your kid fat and just and I say this with the greatest of love and respect for many parents, but if your kid is sweating, if he's fat and he has a smell about him, keep the child in of all of these things that
he has a smell about him. What do you mean by that?
Well, when I was a kid and when you were a kid, there was always one kid in the class that smelled, was fat, had oil, it was oily. What is wrong? We always say, well, ha, 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 look at that kid. But you know what? I bet you that kid stayed alive. He lived to see his 18th birthday.
Well, I can tell you that I wasn't fat. I wasn't oily. And I didn't get attacked and molested.
Well, I, Did you walk home from school?
I rode my bike.
You rode your bike? How far did you ride your bike?
Probably about 3 miles.
You know what? I can't talk to you if you're not going to be honest with me.
I'm being honest with you. I rode a bike. I rode my bike home about 3 miles back and forth.
Well, I was in the 1960s. They were not as brazen and as bold, all right? And back in those days, they probably had their pick of the litter. What do they want? Some kid like you, some freckle-faced kid. So we are hopeful that parents will begin to take this message, allow their children to eat, and even if the child becomes a fat and repugnant child, he's only repugnant to a predator. He's not going to be repugnant to you. You love him. And if he sweats and he stinks, that's sweating and stinking to the kids in the school, not you. You understand?
All right, and so we'll give this kid a real great complex as he gets older, as he's made fun of, as he's called fatty, as he's called piggy, as he's told that he smells. That's really going to help, huh?
Would you rather that happen, Mr. Henry, or you find him behind a garbage bin someplace dead with his pants pulled?
All right. Unbelievable. Our number is 877-876-PHIL, 877-876-7445. What do you think about the idea that harping on childhood obesity is a bad thing because if we keep the kids fat, then they don't make such targets for predators? An obese kid dissuades a predator, according to Charlie LaFountain here on our Newsmaker line. And then, of course, the mandatory fat camps at 17. Our number is 877-876-PHIL, 877-876-7445. Your call's next on the world-famous Phil Henry Show.
We can't fight this fight alone. Give us a call, 877-876-PHIL. That's 877-876-7445. The Patriot Hotline, dial 877-876-PHIL.
Hold on.
That's
I want to
877-876-7445.
Welcome back here on the world-famous Phil Henry Show, and with me is Charlie LaFountain, a father, member of the men's club out in Azusa at his daughter's, at their church, and you have been talking and setting up a program with other parents having to do with the making the kids unattractive to predators, which basically means keeping them obese, which is what we've been hearing we should not be doing with our kids, that we have an epidemic of obese kids.
Mr. Henry, again, I if you want me to repeat what I said.
No, I'll tell the audience that essentially your point is it's better for the child to be fat than to be dead, is essentially what you're saying.
That is exactly correct, sir. And I'm not trying to scare anyone, but I won't back off of that. I would much rather that my daughter live to see the sunrise next Wednesday.
See, everything with you is like right away she's going to die, man. Tomorrow, the next day.
I want my daughter to enjoy her life. And if that means that we are serving, and we do, I can give you, we serve her pancakes for breakfast. She doesn't leave the table unless she eats at least the three quarters of the pancake dish or a waffle and so forth. We must understand. And I told you, and you laughed during the break, when we were leaving 2 weeks ago, we were leaving one of these scout meetings, and I had three or four of the girls in the car, my daughter and three of her friends. I was driving them home from a meeting. We saw this guy hanging around the corner. He looked like a creep. I knew he was one of these child grabbers. Right away, I could tell. And I rolled the window down, and I told him that we got nothing but fat kids in this car, and he's welcome to, if he wants to even walk over and take a look. Of course, I didn't mean that.
Yeah, if you got a guy like that hanging around the neighborhood, why don't you call the cops?
I rolled the window down and I said, I know why you're here, and I got nothing but fat brats in this car.
Now, and how does that make those girls feel?
Are you kidding? I've got a guy who...
Sir, you don't have any idea whether that guy is there to be a predator or not. All I know is you're yelling at some stranger on the street, I got fat brats in this car.
I'm telling him that the fishing's no good. where this is not the fishing hole he wants to be at. Move on down the road. Go to another spot.
Go to another spot. Victimize somebody else's kid.
No, that's not the message that I'm trying to send is, buddy, we're on to you, and we're on to all the predators out there that are trying to victimize children. I got nothing but fat ones in here. And I told you, Mr. Andrew, we were talking about being a child. The fat kid, the one that smelled like you couldn't describe it when you got home to your parents. Do you remember when you were a kid, you'd get home to talk to your parents, they'd say, how did school go? And you couldn't describe the smell on that one kid. And
no, I don't remember that at all, to be honest with you. 877-876-PHIL. I have to move on to get to a phone call here. Mark, go ahead. You're on. Mark? 876-7445 here on a Phil Henry Show with Charlie LaFountain. And we're talking with Charlie about his idea that we have obese children. And these children should not be told to lose weight. They should be told to put the weight on. They should be told to put on as much weight as possible so that they dissuade predators. And what about what we tell women? Don't dress sexy. It only attracts rapists.
I don't know about that, Mr. Henry. I'm not here to talk about women. I'm here to talk about children.
Well, the message is the same. The message is, if you make yourself less attractive, then you won't attract predators. It's the reason why women who are raped become fat, because they don't want it to happen again.
Well, we don't want it to happen the first time. And so, in order not to let it happen the first time, we're asking that the parents of these children put the weight on and keep it on and make sure that these kids, as they are eating these meals, whether they are pancake meals, whether they are potato meals, to make sure they finish these meals. And that by, say, 2 or 3 weeks out, you've got a kid that is a fat kid. That's the only way I can put it, an obese child or however you want to put it.
877-876-PHIL. We got Mark back on the line. We lost him. No, yes, no, yes. No, yes, no, yes, no, yes. No, yes, no, yes. Mark, ahead.
Hi. Yeah.
Hi.
The gentleman in California, I have 4 boys. 10, 5, 4.
Yes, sir.
And I'm going to tell
yes,
you.
Yes, sir.
Yes, I don't raise my children, and I wasn't raised the same way. We were raised to learn the dangers of the world. We are
absolutely
people.
Absolutely.
But that is exactly what needs to happen. It's an issue of parenting at this point. If you're not teaching your children what to look out for, you are causing more harm than good. You are.
Oh, I want to teach them, but I also don't want them to be walking down the street and they're a target for some freak who sees this.
Predators are going to take the opportunity. If you don't teach your kids the dangers, it doesn't matter if they weigh 5 pounds or 500. They're going to take the easiest opportunity. So by not
you're telling me that the predator he's going to go after a 500-pound kid.
Plenty of airtime. So by
exactly. Why don't I tell you what, Mark? Why don't you hang on the line here? We'll be right back with your number 877-876-PHIL, 877-876-7445. We'll be back. The Phil Henry Show.
Call the Patriot Hotline now, 877-876-PHIL. That's 877-876-7445.
Welcome back here on the world-famous Phil Henry Show, and hanging on is Mark, and we also have Charlie LaFountain. Charlie, you were saying it in the break?
Well, I was just saying that my daughter, we want my daughter as fat and, frankly, as unhygienic as possible. We don't let her take that. She takes 2 showers a week. And
so, in other words, you want your daughter to be repulsive to everybody and everything?
If it keeps the child alive...
I know, past next Tuesday.
No, I'm talking about... I don't know, is the gentleman there that I was talking to?
Yeah, Mark is here.
Yeah, I'm still here.
You know, wouldn't you rather your child be walking around alive at the age of 18, fat and stinking like a goat,
Well, your church going, there is no guarantee on anybody's life. All you can do is prepare your children for the best way possible. But I'm going to tell you one thing. If you're, and it sounds like your heart wants to be in the right place by keeping your kids safe, all what parents want to do. But if your mind was where your heart was, you teach about the dangers of the world, not about how many pork chops they're going to eat. You're going to teach them about what to look out for. If you guys want to do something to really help your community and the children, you're going to tell them about the dangers. You're going to tell them about what not to do, not to go down the alleyway, not to go anywhere by yourself, not to open the door for strangers. That's what you do. You don't sit there and just say, eat as many pieces as you want to do. That's just, you can't get there from here, and you can't fix stupid. That's all I'm saying.
I think what you're jumping to some conclusions. Of course I do. As I said, when we were leaving that scout meeting, there I saw that guy in the corner, and I said to him, hey, pal, they're fat, and they're with me. And
yeah, I bet you that made those kids feel great.
No, but I'm saying to the kids, there's one of the creeps right now to hang around here.
Well, let me tell you something. When I was 10 years old, my brother and I and my family was on vacation, and there was a child abductor at the pool where we were at in our hotel. He didn't even belong there. He was part, unfortunately, of the National Guard. That guy shouldn't have been in there. But
wow.
It wasn't because we were fat. It wasn't because we were an opportunity, because our parents had just went inside for a second and left us there. But they had taught us enough smarts to recognize the situation. And that gentleman was apprehended in Nashville, Tennessee. That's what you do.
Was he able to get a hold of you? Did he take you in the car?
No, he didn't. We wouldn't go. They tried to sweet talk everybody. No, we wouldn't go. That's because our parents taught us the right way.
But let me ask you a question. Here's the $64,000 question, though. How much did you weigh? Were you fat and ugly, or were you a slim down, good looking little morsel?
Come on, will you?
No. God. That's a fair question. Let me tell you, when I graduated, I was 5'6" and 230 pounds.
That sounds about right.
230 pounds at the age of graduated from high school, 18?
Yeah.
230 pounds.
I was obese. The gentleman was out for an opportunity. That's what I'm trying to say.
You were obese. Exactly. You picked up the weight when you found out this creep was going after you.
No, you're not listening to this man.
You cannot get there from here because we can banter all night long, and that's fine.
I understand.
Believe what you're going to believe, but I'm going to tell you, if you really want to help your children and the children in your community, you're going to show them the right way. You're going to teach them right from wrong, not about... Don't worry about it. And you talked about fat camps. Really, you're going to give a child 17 years of not doing, having to do anything at all, and then all of a sudden you're going to put them through a boot camp to, you want to kill them at 18 because
you've got to slim them down.
You're not used to it.
Don't you want to? Well, once they've been fat through their childhood years and they haven't been hit on by these predators, then you got to, put them in the fat camp and get the fat off.
Why?
Because they're going to be 18 going to college.
There opportunities to go after 18-year-olds? Anybody can hold a gun. If it doesn't matter how much you weigh, you're going to put that person that gun says.
Yeah, but it's not my problem.
Am I right? And now, there's your $64,000 question. How do you fat your way out of that?
How do I fat my way out of that?
I
fat my way out of it by saying that at the age of 18, they're adults. I can't make them do anything. I can't tell them to put on weight, take it off, nothing. So I have to let them do what they're going to do, and they're going to be dumb. You want to know why? Because... they didn't get fat. Forget it.
No, this man's making so much sense that you can't. The man's right. You can't fat your way out of it. Listen, very good, Mark. Thanks for the call. I appreciate that very much. Our number 877-876-PHIL. Charlie LaFountain with us as we talk about the best way to dissuade predators from coming after your kids. And your idea, and it's been described as revolutionary, is essentially just... making the child as physically unappealing. And then you just heard what this man said.
I had no idea how much he weighed. He said that there was a child abductor at the pool that he was at. But I didn't know what the kid looked like, and I don't know whether this guy was going after this kid or not. He said he was fat when he graduated. What I'm saying is we've got too much of an emphasis, far too much of an emphasis on taking off the weight and too much childhood obesity and all of this stuff. We've been talking until we're blue in the face about this. I feed my daughter large meals, big meals. We always sit down as a family and we eat a very large and big meal. We have candy. There's no diet soda. I forbid her to exercise. I forbid my own daughter to exercise. Do you think I do that because I don't love her? Do you think I do that? Do you think I want my daughter to be the fat? And she's fat. There's no question about it. She started out at the age of 14. She was very lovely, but I want that kid fat. and she's fat, and she only is allowed 2 showers a week. That means, yes, she does. She stinks.
And you know, they're going to send her home from school, or they're going to send Child Protective Services out to your place. You know,
no, they're not going to do that.
Well, because if the kid's coming to school fat and stinks, they're going to wonder whether this kid's got any proper hygiene, what kind of a home she comes from.
No, she doesn't stink. When I said stinks like a goat, it was hyperbole.
You said to that man, would you rather your kid be alive past next week or fat and smells like a goat? What does your daughter smell like, a goat?
No, she doesn't smell like first of all, I wouldn't know what a goat smells. Well, we were in Jamaica once on vacation. I never smelled a goat, but I can tell you, I was fed goat stew, and I had a conversation with your producer before we went on the air, the Mr. Rance.
Uh-huh.
And he's going on and on about goat stew, and I said, you know, you need a psychiatrist. You need a...
All right, enough about him and goat stew. I'm talking about your daughter.
No, my daughter doesn't smell like a goat. But she stinks the way a kid stinks to another kid. In other words, if you go into a classroom as an adult and you smell about 40 kids, smells like a kid, right? In other words, it may not be the most pleasant odor in the world. You know and I know. We all know that kids smell. But to another kid, she may stink like a dead body. You know what I'm saying?
So, no, I don't know what you're saying. I don't know anything that you're talking about here.
You got to be putting me on.
I know that when I was in school, there were kids that some kids had better hygiene than others. You know.
Well, what did your mother tell you?
I was a skinny kid. Okay? I was a really, really skinny kid.
No, I mean about taking a bath.
I took a bath every damn day, man. I took a shower every day. That's what they wanted me to do. And
did you use deodorant?
Yes, all of that stuff. I was taught to do that. What the hell's wrong with you, man? You're going to teach a kid that?
Of course you are. So what you have to do is do something radical and different. If you want to keep a predator away from your kid, make sure that your kid goes out the door smelling like something that has been dead under the house. And
you got to be kidding me, man. There's no way on God's good green earth that any parent is going to allow that to happen. You're going to have the school after you. You're going to have the school...
Who's going to come after you for what?
Sending a kid off to school like they don't get proper hygiene at home, you're going to have Child Protective Services.
Well, again, I think you're mistaking what I'm saying.
No, I understand perfectly what you're saying, Mr. LaFountain. You're saying make sure the kid is fat, make sure the kid stinks, make sure the kid's oily, make sure the kid is just a real repulsive wad of bleh, you know, going to school, and predators won't go near. And what happens when you're wrong?
When I'm wrong.
Because it's going to be a win. It's not going to be an if. If you allow kids just to, degrade to that level, and then that's the only protection you give them.
I didn't say that's the only protection. Didn't you hear what I said? I told that guy standing on the street corner.
Yeah, that's another thing, man. Telling that guy that you thought was a child. How did you know that guy was a child molester?
I didn't know. I didn't know if he was a child molester. He looked like some bum that was hanging around on the corner who looked like he wanted to put his hands on somebody somehow. I don't know what. But he was hanging around loitering. He looked like a real bum, a real beatnik bum. So as we were pulling out...
A beatnik bum?
You know what I mean. So as we were pulling out, I said to the girls, I said, girls, watch this one. And I rolled the window down, and I said to the guy, I said, hey, bum, I got 4 of them in here, real ripe, but fat. And when I said ripe, I wasn't talking about ripe like a piece of fruit. I said the smell alone. And guess what he did? He turned on his heel and just began walking down the street right out of the neighborhood.
Bull crap!
Are you calling me a liar?
Yeah, that's exactly what I'm calling you.
You're saying that didn't happen.
You're telling me that you looked out the window at some guy...
You know what, Mr. Henry, a very pleasant and profitable good evening to you. And frankly, sir, I hope you die early of a bug.
Wow! Wow!
What'd he do?
He hung up, but not before he hoped that I die early of a heart attack. If I die of a heart attack there, Mr. LaFountain, it won't be early, man. How do you like that guy?
Yeah, you were laughing at him, though.
You're damn right I was laughing at him. This guy's telling me that he pulls out of some Girl Scout meeting with his daughter and 2 of her friends, sees some guy standing on the corner, right?
Yeah.
And he looks out the window, and he thinks this guy's a child molester, and he goes, hey, bum, I got 4 of them in here, fat and real ripe.
And the guy turns around. He claims, this guy that he said, this bum, turns around and walks out of the neighborhood.
Are you kidding me, man? That's a pretty effective tool.
He's not telling the truth. Are you kidding?
I got him out here on line two. I don't know if you want to talk to him or not.
These people always call back after they have... Mr. LaFountain, you hung up on me.
Yes, could I speak with Robert Leonard, please?
Mr. LaFountain, it's Phil Henry, the host of the show.
Yes, sir, I don't want to talk to you. I want to speak to the gentleman who understood me. I just heard a man who understood everything I said.
Yeah, this is about Robert Leonard. And
shut up. You're talking to me. I'm the host of the show.
Yeah, I want to speak to the man that was sympathetic to my point of view.
He wasn't sympathetic. All he said was he believed that this guy turned on his heel and walked out of the neighborhood.
I told you that I looked at him and I said, hey, bum, there's four fat... Right. I gave the... You were never in the Navy, were you?
No.
I was a signal corpsman, so I did the signal...
Yeah?
I had some signal corps flags in the trunk of my car, and I did the signal for four, fat, and right.
Good night.
Good night? That's all you have to say is good night. You know, there is a hell, Mr. Henry. There is a hell. It's real. It's very real. People go there. You'll go there. In fact, you're next.
You know, I take that as a threat.
Yeah, it sounds like it.
I could take that as a threat. You're next. I got the Signal Corps flags out of the trunk of my car.
Yeah, we probably stood behind his car and went, four, right, fat.
How do you know what Signal Corps stuff is?
Well, I mean, I read about it.
That's a guy that's... This guy's off his freaking cracker, man. He's got the flags. Four, ripe, and fat.
Yeah, and then the guy turned around and split.
Yeah, I'm sure that all happened, man, just the way he said it did. Because Charlie LaFountain's got it down, man. I got four in here, they're fat and they're ripe. He's doing it with Signal Corps flags, and the dude splits. There's no way, man.
Why don't you believe people, man? How come you're all so cynical?
Robert, there's a difference between being cynical and just a complete and utter imbecile, all right? I'm not going to believe that because only an idiot would believe that.
So you call me an idiot?
Pretty much, yeah, yeah. If you believe that, yeah, you are. You're an idiot.
Well.
Uh-huh. We'll be back here on the world-famous Phil Henry Show, 877-876-PHIL. The world-famous Phil Henry Show and philhenryshow.com. Our news and information hour coming up next with Robert Leonard and Bud Dickman.
We can't fight this fight alone.
You know you'll burn.
Give us a call. 877-876-PHIL. That's 877-876-7445.
Where you're going, there's no air conditioning.
The Patriot Hotline, dial 877-876-PHIL. That's 877-876-7445.
All right, we're going to try something, and I don't know. Welcome back here to the world-famous Phil Henry Show. One of the people that we use frequently on our program as a contributor is Herb Sewell. Mr. Sewell spent 8 years at Atascadero Forensic Hospital for the, it used to be called for the criminally insane. These days they call them forensic hospitals, but he was there. And he was remanded there by the courts after being found guilty of a variety of crimes against children. He is on our Newsmaker Line 3. And, Herb, you there?
I'm right here, Phil, yes.
All right. And Charlie LaFountain, Mr. LaFountain, I thought I'd get you back on the line because I wanted to... wait a minute. That was... we're still got R.C. Collins going? That's nuts. All right. Here is Charlie LaFountain. Sir, are you there?
I'm here, but I want the record to show that I am going to be talking to a freak, okay? No, there's no need, sir, to be that. No, hold on for a minute. I understand that Mr. Henry says he wants me on the radio with you, and you're a freak of nature. Do you understand that?
I understand you have issues. Yeah.
I have issues, that's right. I've got issues.
All right, but, you know, I thought you two could dialogue.
Don't give me this modern dialogue. I'm going to dialogue. Next thing you know, you're going to tell me I'm going to get a, what do you call it? Talk about closure? Yeah, they're going to want me to have closure. Is that what you want me to have, closure?
No, I just, all right, the two of you can talk. All right?
Well, here, if I could start off, with all due respect, Mr. Fountain, your daughter, you say, is how old? I'll tell you about my daughter, but I want it to be very clear. If anything happens to my daughter because of this conversation I'm having with you, you'll look like something they cut down from the roof of Ed Gein's barn. You understand what I'm saying?
I understand, sir, yes.
So as long as we're clear, you'll be gutted, salted, and tanned.
I understand, sir.
Good God. All right, we got it.
Not you. I'm talking to this guy.
All right.
Your daughter's how old?
My daughter's 14.
And how much does she weigh?
Boy, you really, you're full.
No, I'm just wondering. How much does she weigh? How much your daughter weigh?
My daughter weighs 190 pounds.
14 and 190?
Yo, what are you going to do now?
I didn't say anything.
14 and 190 pounds, yeah.
Your daughter's 14 and 190 pounds, and you only allow her to shower how often?
Are you getting your jollies or something?
He's asking these questions for a reason.
Oh, I bet he's asking them for a reason. I'm not getting my jollies, as you put it. There's a method to my madness, if you will. What was your question?
I just realized it's sort of a pun that I had, a method to my madness. Because at one time I was mad, you know, very mad. You know,
see what I mean? He's going freak on me.
Come on, Herb, just stick with it, okay?
All right. And how many times a week?
My daughter showers twice a week.
And what would you say she smells like?
What does she smell like? She smells like a compost heap.
Like dung.
Yes, like dung, like fertilizers. Yeah, she smells most of the time like cow dung.
God!
Take it easy, Mr. Henry, okay? I have here a 14-year-old girl. I'm just taking these notes. A 14-year-old girl. And another thing, I don't like the way you talk.
I heard of your girl.
Why don't you talk like an American, okay?
I am an American.
Why do you talk, you know?
Come on, Charlie, we're losing time here, and you're nitpicking a bunch of horse dung, okay? Speaking of horse dung, cow dung.
I said cow dung, not horse dung. What's the difference in the stink? I think there's more of a rich and aromatic. What do you mean, what's the difference? I don't know what the difference is.
All right, just ask the questions.
Well, none of the questions. Here's my comment, and here's my statement to Miss LaFound. It's all in thing. The child's 14 years of age. She is 190 pounds, means she'll probably be 200 pounds by the end of the summer.
That is our goal, yes, sir.
That is your goal,
yes.
She smells, as you say, like a compost heap or like a freshly laid cow patty. I didn't say anything about being laid, okay?
He didn't say a freshly dumped cow patty.
Right. So, I forgot that. She sweat? Yeah, she sweats profusely. Cow probably sweats like a pig, you say? Sweats like a farm animal. Yeah, like a racehorse. Well, I can't see anything wrong with that. Yeah. Why, you lousy... That's it. I'd like to know where you live.
I'm not telling you where I live. All I'm telling you is I don't see anything wrong with that.
Oh, man. Where does he live, Mr. Henry?
You know what, Herb? I didn't know you were going to come on here and bait the guy.
Yeah! Sounds like barbecue to me. Mr. Henry, I demand that you tell me where this guy lives.
I can't and I won't, okay?
You won't. You're not doing it. Mm-hmm. I get me some barbecue sauce on something like that. Yeah. All right, I'll tell you what I'm going to do, Henry. What up? Let me ask you a question. You sure you like girls?
We had to cut out of that because what happened was a lot of foul language ensued and we just dumped. I hope you'll forgive me, ladies and gentlemen.
Boy, that guy LaFountain, what do you think done do?
He's going to just have to sit there and stew in his own anger, man. I ain't telling him where Herb is. And I do want to get Herb back on the line and tell him that's the last time I have him on the air.
You're kidding?
No, I'm not kidding because he purposefully set that guy up to bait him and to piss him off. That's the last time he uses my show to do that. We'll be back with our News and Information Hour next with Robert and Bud here on the world-famous Phil Henry Show.
Phil Henry.
Yeah!